Previously on Falling Low.
And I was getting Dad ready, and I looked out the door, and holy cow. And just that quick, Herman was in the doorway, and he said, "This is Judgment Day, Mike." So I just picked up Dad.
Mom was very emphatic. "We have to get Pete to the hospital." That she just kept saying that. It could have been worse. You know, we survived. Again, you know, you make those choices. How do you want to live? Dad came home for Christmas, but he was very ill.
But he was so proud. You know, he was so happy to be alive and to be there, as I remember it. Even though his eyes were just full of arthritis, he still let us take pictures, which was pretty rare. He did not like having his picture taken. But he did. I almost felt like he knew, you know?
I never knew my Grandpa Pete, but at the same time, I do feel like I know him. My family has an incredible gift for passing down stories and keeping the memory and life of lost loved ones alive.
He was a character. He got into a lot of trouble, fun trouble. He loved his pranks. He loved to laugh. It was wonderful when certain family members came because we knew Dad would smile. We knew Dad was going to laugh. And when Dad laughed, we all laughed. We all enjoyed that.
My Grandpa Pete suffered from very painful and debilitating rheumatoid arthritis and was in and out of hospitals throughout his adult life.
When he was 25, he had his first surgery on his knee. I have one memory of him well, and that was when I was very, very young, and we were still living in the little house. I just remember Ingeborg was on his back, but then Mom had to come and get Ingeborg off his back. He was giving her a piggyback ride. That's the only memory I have of him being well.
My mom and I recorded a conversation with my Aunt Ingeborg, remembering stories from their childhood with my grandpa.
He called me by saying, "Psst, psst," when he was in his bedroom and I was watching Captain Kangaroo or Petticoat Junction or one of my favorite shows. And he would go, "Psst."
I thought that was the universal. We all answered to "Psst."
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we usually sent you if
of course. Of course.
Mike would tell Martin, Martin would tell me, and I'd tell you. And Buster wasn't an indoor dog, so.
Yeah. I didn't have anybody to go to. I remember mostly being Dad's sidekick. Dad and I would go oopsing.
Mm-hmm.
He, of course, farmer that he was, loved to watch and see what all the neighbors were up to and how their crops were coming. And particularly when you can row the corn, you know, first sight of corn in the spring where you can see it coming just popping out of the ground and you can see it in rows. And he would check to make sure that everybody's rows were straight. He didn't drive on highways, but he would drive on the gravel roads because of his arthritis. And Mom didn't like him driving because he liked to go fast. So he and I would go in the car and we'd go oopsing, and whenever he got too close to the ditch, I was supposed to say, "Oops, Daddy, oops, Daddy, oops," you know, and he would get us back right again. And then he had prescription drugs that he took, and he would drive to Story City and park in front of Gandrup's, and I would run in to Gandrup's and pick up the prescription. And then we would take the stamps home, and every once in a while, when nobody else was home, usually in the winter when it was too cold for Dad to get out and go to church, he and I would put the gold bond stamps into the books. And we just had piles and piles of gold bond stamps. Also, every once in a while, we would pick flowers for Mom when we go out. And one time I remember going to the pasture to get clover for my rabbits. We got 3 rabbits and I raised them so that he could fry them. And of course, they were the best rabbits he'd ever eaten.
when he'd fry something, the butter would be that deep. You know?
You deep fried it in butter. You didn't just fry it. You deep fried it. Yeah.
Then he had a white four-legged stool. Every now and then he'd cook. And he would take that stool and sit by the stove. And then he would pontificate to me, "You see where I'm sitting, Mikas. I stay by the pot I'm cooking. Where is your mother? She's flitting about everywhere, and this thing is boiling over on the stove."
Just like in most homes, the kitchen at Falling Low was where the family spent most of their time if they weren't working or at school. Even more so because of my grandpa's condition, they created a comfortable spot for him there that they called the throne, which is only appropriate as he was still actively managing the farm and played his role as the father from this spot in the house.
In the kitchen corner sat Dad's throne, and that's what we called it, the throne. And it was a leather chair.
It was a leather. In its day, probably was quite an expensive, very distinguished type chair. And then it had been raised up. Two pieces of plywood had been bolted to each side to the legs to get it up so he didn't have to get up and down so far. And then there was a hot water register that sat there that he kept his stuff on. And the book he was reading.
The book he was reading, the Reader's Digest, his pack of cigarettes.
Yep, there's always a Time magazine there.
Time
pack
magazine.
Of cigarettes. And then one time, just to prove to Mom he could quit smoking, he just quit for a year. He quit on Christmas Eve, didn't touch anything for a year. Good Norwegian.
Yes.
Stubborn, you know.
But he sucked enough lemon drops to...
Yeah. And that pack of cigarettes sat there for a year, you know? And then he started with a pipe. I remember that. And so his pipe fixings was all there. And then he finally went back to cigarettes. There's a doctor down at Iowa City. Dad smoked unfiltered Lucky Strikes. Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. That was written on the bottle.
Well, then he switched to Lark.
Yeah, well, after the pipe, then he switched to Lark because his doctor down in Iowa City told him who smoked Lark, they would be better for him. So he started smoking Lark, you know. And as a kid, you have to try them. And Lucky Strike weren't bad, but Lark were terrible. Jeez. Swipe one every now and then and go out north of the barn and just test them, you know, see what.
So he would be sitting facing the east, and then next to that was the high chair. We called it the high chair that he sat in at the table for meals. And that's where Herman would usually sit.
Mm-hmm.
Dad would sit on the throne in the corner of the kitchen. And I would sit on the higher chair next to him on his puta, the pillow. And we would crack peanuts and eat chocolate. He just loved peanuts and chocolate. And there was no such thing as, you know, chocolate covered peanuts in Dad's world. So we were cracking peanuts in the evening, the winter evenings, every once in a while. Not very often, but, you know, he would just tell me stories about growing up. And sometimes Herman was out there with us, but usually it was just the two of us.
While he was active in the family life, Grandpa Pete's arthritis got progressively worse, so much so that the last 3 years of his life, he needed a wheelchair. My uncles helped move him around the house.
When he did walk, there was a horrible grinding. You could hear the hip bone on hip bone. It was just total pain. There was pain. Any movement was painful.
When the crash happened on December 9th, 1968, my Uncle Mike happened to be with my grandpa, getting him ready for dinner. If the timing of the crash were any different, and he was in his room by himself, there would not have been time to get into his room to lift him out of bed and get him out of the house before the house collapsed in flames.
I don't know how he would have gotten into him in that room that was off the TV room and then out again.
Mm-hmm.
But this way, Mike was just out mm-hmm. of the room.
Well, and I imagine he shielded him from...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I again think of how painful that exodus from the house had to be for him, and to be dumped in a car, it had to have just been agony. He was in shock, and the doctor said it hastened his death.
My grandma Marie wrote down her memories of the crash and the events that followed for the 25th anniversary of the crash in 1998. Here are her words, read by my double cousin, Ingeborg's daughter, Rebecca Hansen.
Pete was in and out of the hospital. On January 5th, the doctor told me Pete would not live out the day, but he did. And by afternoon, he was conversing with us and feeling so much better. Prayer is so helpful in so many ways. On January 29th, Pete was not feeling well again, and he decided it was a good idea to go to the hospital before he became real bad. Michael and Martin took him into the hospital. The girls had a music program at school that evening, and Pete insisted I attend it. I went to see him in the afternoon and sat with him for about half an hour, but he was asleep the whole time. The boys went in to see him after supper while I was at the program, and they reported Dad was asleep. We waited, but he didn't wake up. About 9:30, the phone rang and the nurse said, "Pete isn't looking good. Why don't you come?" And I said I'd be right there. Before I had my coat on, the phone rang again and the nurse said, "All of you come."
The night that he died, the way I remember it is that either I or Sigrid or both of us had a high school music concert. And we were sleeping with our clothes on the end of the bed because we knew it could happen at any time. And I remember many nights Mom saying, "Just leave your slips and your hose on because, you know, we're going to get this call to go to the hospital." If I remember correctly, the concert was done at 9 o'clock or so, and at 9:30, Mom got a phone call from the hospital, and she went, and then, I don't know if she called us, but everybody then, "Get on up here, you know, this is bad." And so we all went up there. I remember him taking his last breaths. I remember thinking, well, Mom's got Mike, and Sigrid's got Martin, and Herman was there, and I'm not going over to Herman. And I just thought, well, here I am standing alone watching Dad take his last breaths, you know. I just kept thinking he's going to breathe again. And he just didn't. I thought it was Dr. Heise who pronounced him dead. But I know it wasn't Dr. Semler, our doctor, and I remember thinking, I'm so glad it wasn't him who told us that terrible news, because I wanted to hate the person who said it. And he said, "This man has expired." You know, it wasn't Pete's dead, it was "This man has expired," and looked up at the clock to note the time, which I've forgotten.
He lived 52 days after the crash, but he was in the hospital 36 of those days.
Even though he survived the crash on Falling Low Farm, that trauma put his body through a level of shock that he would never recover from. After living his entire adult life suffering from arthritis and many other related conditions, he was finally relieved from his pain.
And then we went home, and I remember on the mantle of the fireplace, we had our family picture, and just thinking, wow, this is now incomplete. We're not there anymore. What's going to happen? I remember Virginia McCoy coming over and getting us to laugh. And I will always be grateful to her for that. You know, thinking of some of the funny things that Dad had said, it was great. You know, it just helped so much to lighten the mood.
And she kind of stayed until Gert and Sig got there, didn't she?
She stayed a good long time, yeah, because they were such good friends.
And then it was, I know it was after midnight, it was late, late, when Gert and Sig got there.
Yeah.
My Grandpa Pete died on January 30th, 1969, and his funeral was on February 3rd, which happens to be 50 years to the day when this episode was released. Believe me when I say this was not clever planning on our part. We believe this is yet another way that God is showing us that He is the one behind this story.
I remember it was very, very cold, and it had snowed. And the funeral, they had it at St. Petri because they knew there'd be a lot of people. Mom didn't want any tears. And I think we did really well up until we walked out. And when I saw my class, I lost it. I'll never forget the soloist saying, "Thy will be done," that our relative had written, Uncle Nehemiah's. It was a very, very nice service. But yeah, it was hard. I remember going out to the cemetery, but I don't remember anything after that. I don't know if we went back to the church. I don't remember.
I remember what a relief it was when the funeral was over. I remember going up to the funeral home and seeing Dad in the casket and thinking, wow, he looks good.
I know.
His face wasn't scrunched in pain.
Yeah.
He just looked so comfortable. And I kept watching his chest because I thought he is going to pop up and, you know, scare us or something. And he was wearing a tie, so I was watching that tie thinking it's going to start rising and falling because he just looked so good. It was so good to see him like that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a long 4 days. He died Thursday night. We didn't have the funeral till Monday. And that was a long, long weekend. Way too long.
And it was a busy weekend. People were coming.
Yeah.
I remember family coming.
A lot of people in that house. A lot of chaos.
Busy, busy. And emotional. Every time someone new came in, they would cry, and then we would cry and have to go over it again. And you just get kind of calmed down, and then someone else would come in, and they would cry, and then we'd cry.
Yeah.
What would have happened to Dad if he hadn't have passed away? Mom had to go to work. There was no income.
Right.
I mean, would he have gone to a nursing home?
No, 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 no.
So what would have happened? I mean, he couldn't be alone. I think it was another case of God stepping in and just...
Well, I definitely think that. Dad would have been so miserable. Well, he already was physically, but, you know...
Yeah.
With the passing of my grandfather, Peter J. Chernogle, and Fallinglow Farm destroyed, the family draws strength from the incredible legacy that can be traced back for more than a century to rebuild their lives. Next time on Fallinglow.